Welcome to the Lauterpacht lunchtime lecture in international law, where it is our great pleasure to have with us Professor Donna Nagy, who is the Ben Dutton Professor of Law at the University of Indiana. And she has traveled all the way from there to be with us today. So we're very grateful. Donna teaches and writes in the areas of securities litigation, securities regulation, and corporations. And she has published extensively on matters of insider trading and fiduciary principles, security disclosure, and environmental, social, and governance information, as well as on government officials and financial conflicts of interest, and securities enforcement remedies. Professor Nagy is a member of the American Institute, and she also served as a member of the National Judicatory Council, of the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and of the ABA Corporate Laws Committee. She's going to address us today on embracing environmental, social, and governance disclosure, what the US can learn from the UK and the EU. I have the floor.
Thank you for that very kind introduction. And thank you to Vanessa and Karen and Zal for all the kind hospitality that has been a part of my visit. The Schneider Lectures are held in memory of Dr. Earl Schneider, a 1947 Indiana University law graduate. And they are an important part of a special partnership between the University of Cambridge and Indiana University Maurer School Law. The goal has been to have lectures from each school, lecturers from each school visiting each other every spring in alternating years. In April 2018, IU had the pleasure of hosting Professor Sarabi Rangarathan, who gave a fascinating lecture on the legal construction of the ocean. And in April of 2015, Professor Mark Weller came to Bloomington and shared his expertise on the time-honored question, can law stop war? On the Maurer side of this partnership, our then dean of the law school, Austin Parrish, visited right here, although I hear this room is new, so not exactly right here, sharing his expertise on U.S. courts and extraterritorial jurisdiction. And before that, it was my colleague, Professor Fred Cade, in 2011, who spoke about the growing importance of international data protection. So the initial plan had been for me to deliver a lecture to all of you in spring 2020, but the global pandemic made that impossible. So now, 3 years later, I have the great privilege of rekindling our wonderful tradition. 3 years ago, my general topic would have been the same. Namely, I was planning to talk about enhancing disclosures by corporations with respect to matters involving environmental, social, and governance, or put more simply, ESG disclosure. ESG disclosure encompasses disclosure about a host of sustainability matters, including climate change, pollution, natural resources. Those are all examples of the E. Examples of the S include workplace culture and safety, human rights, supply chain issues, and the G for governance. Examples being executive compensation as well as board diversity and composition. 3 years ago, prior to the pandemic, the US was only beginning to consider seriously the question of whether and how to convert a type of corporate disclosure that in the US at least has been mostly ad hoc and voluntary to a system where such disclosures are standardized and required and indeed an enforceable set of standards by our Securities and Exchange Commission, the principal regulator of capital markets in the United States. The movement forward in the US again, 3 years ago, was prompted in part by a 2014 decision by the European Union to adopt the non-financial reporting directive, which required certain large companies to provide non-financial disclosure documents along with their annual reports, generally known as sustainability reports. The US considerations were also fueled by the UK's Companies Act, which likewise requires publicly traded companies and certain other companies to publish an annual strategic report that includes ESG-related items. So the 3 years that has transpired since what would have been my lecture years ago, I've seen even more expansive and profound changes to mandatory ESG reporting on your side of the ocean. But unfortunately, on my side, controversies have only intensified and voluntary and ad hoc disclosure remains the norm. One important development in the UK occurred just about a year ago when the Companies Act began to require publicly traded companies as well as private companies with more than 500 employees and 500 million pounds in turnover to disclose specific climate-related financial information based on what's known as the TCFD framework, the Task Force of Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. The TCFD is a global consortium of investors, accountants, and company executives, and has developed a framework for evaluating climate risks and opportunities. And so this is being used worldwide. 1,500 organizations, over 1,300 companies with a market capitalization of $12 trillion and financial institutions responsible for assets of $150 trillion. So TCFD has really set arm there. Another important ESG disclosure development occurred more recently in January 2023 in the EU when the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, the CSRD, came into force. The CSRD substantially increases not only the detail and extent of the ESG disclosures that must be published, but also the number and types of companies that are or will be in the scope of the EU's ESG reporting regime. There's basically a four-year sort of transition, more and more companies being into that. In addition to EU public companies, the CSRD reporting obligations will extend to certain private companies in the EU, as well as to some non-EU companies with a significant presence in the EU, which means that the CSRD in years to come, and ironically enough, will be requiring ESG reporting by many US issuers. So they're going to be taken into this kicking and screaming one way or the other. In fact, it's estimated when the EU CSRD comes into full effect, it will result in nearly five times as many companies reporting. So that's about 50,000 companies as compared with about 11,000 companies now currently reporting under the former directives. So with these new UK and EU requirements in mind, I'm now approaching the topic of ESG disclosure with this overarching question. What can the United States learn from the UK and the EU experience? For investors and others favoring enhanced ESG disclosure by US companies, the future is looking brighter than it was 3 years ago, but not nearly as bright as it might have seemed even this time last year. In the United States, the regulatory approach to ESG disclosure began to change in 2021, once the Biden administration replaced the Trump administration. President Trump was not a fan of climate disclosures or regulation. Very soon, though, into the Biden administration's transition, the interim chair of the Securities and Exchange Commission welcomed public input on possible rulemaking by the SEC relating to climate change disclosures. And soon after that, SEC Chair Gary Gensler, the SEC sought public comments on a very thoughtfully framed rule proposal for the enhancement and standardization of climate-related disclosures. So a year ago, when this disclosure regime was put out for comment in proposed rules by the Securities and Exchange Commission, it was a move that signaled to many that the United States was finally responding to the global shift among investors and asset managers toward the integration of ESG data into fundamental value analysis. Today, however, as ESG issues in the United States have become politically polarized, and as litigation challenges over even the SEC's authority to require enhanced disclosures loom large, the possibility of meaningful change in the United States appears more remote. But that only underscores the importance of recognizing how much the United States can learn from the rest of the world generally, and the UK and the EU in particular. So before I go any further, let me set out for you a bit of a roadmap as to how my talk during the next half hour or so will unfold. First, I'm going to explain as a general matter why investors and asset managers have been clamoring for enhanced disclosures by United States securities issuers on matters relating to ESG. Second, I want to provide a brief overview of the U.S. system of so-called periodic disclosure. A basic understanding of the status quo for U.S. public companies provides valuable insight into why there is currently such a controversy in the United States over enhanced ESG disclosures. I'll then sketch out for you the United States Securities and Exchange Commission climate change disclosure proposal that was put out for notice and comment a year ago. And I'll also discuss the litigation challenges that will almost certainly be underway even before the ink is dry on the SEC's final rules. So we're promised by the SEC chair that we're going to see final rules on climate change disclosure sometime later in spring 2023, and the lawsuits are already bubbling. And so I'll explain a little bit about what we can anticipate and why. Then, after talking about the SEC's climate change disclosure proposal, I'll turn back to the recent developments in the UK and the EU, namely this CFTC framework that I spoke about, which is the norm now in the UK, and the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive in the EU. And I'll give you a bit of a fuller description of those requirements. So along the way in this talk, I plan to highlight what I see as four very important lessons or takeaways for the United States as the Securities and Exchange Commission finalizes and prepares to litigate climate change disclosure rules. The first lesson is that ESG disclosure is fundamentally about disclosure and not about substantive regulation of the underlying corporate conduct. The EU and the UK are also world leaders in enforceable sustainability initiatives, laws that actually require companies to slow the pace of climate change, laws that actually require companies to take into consideration many other sustainability factors. This distinction between substantive regulation and disclosure regulation allows us to draw this sharper distinction. Disclosure is about what companies must say they are doing, as opposed to government regulation, which actually tells companies what to do. That is The Europeans have been world leaders in that on the substantive change front. The US is just catching up with the disclosure part. The second lesson I draw goes to the public-private disclosure gap that currently exists in the United States, but has been narrowed considerably in the EU and the UK with this recent legislation. To provide capital markets with sufficient disclosures to achieve the multiple objectives of securities regulation, it is insufficient to require disclosure only for publicly traded companies. The fight in the US about disclosure is currently only about publicly traded companies having to disclose. But here in the UK and in the EU, there's actually requirements not only on public companies, but private companies as well. The third lesson concerns the adequacy of the traditional definition of materiality. In the United States, materiality has been taken to mean that unless information affects the financial bottom line of a company, it is not material to the reasonable investor. But the UK and the EU are employing a much broader notion of materiality that recognizes that investors and shareholders will often consider certain information material for reasons other than its direct financial repercussions of the company. And so I'll be able to give specific examples of that. And finally, the traditional argument in the United States that continuous disclosure is impossible or impractical is undermined by the insider trading and market abuse regulations here in the UK and EU that require real-time disclosure with limited exceptions that do not effectively swallow the rule. If publicly traded companies in the US had obligations to disclose material information on a more continuous and ongoing basis, rather than quarterly and in annual reports, the requirements to make ESG disclosure would not be the lightning rod for controversy that we are experiencing today. So that's the general overview there. I'll turn to my first topic. Why investors worldwide have been integrating ESG data into fundamental value analysis of the companies and investment portfolios. I could, of course, devote all of my time allocated to this one single topic, but I won't. I can simply emphasize the fact that the disclosure of ESG information has evolved from being an issue of importance to principally socially responsible investors. That was the sort of buzz in the 1970s and 80s and 90s, to in the 2000s being of substantial interest to asset managers and institutional investors such as BlackRock, Vanguard, Goldman Sachs, and others. In 2020, a respected report on US-based institutional investors found that 98% of the top 100 said they are considering ESG data in the investment process. And 88% of them agreed or strongly agreed that companies that prioritize ESG initiatives represent better opportunities for long-term returns than companies that do not. And around the same time in 2020, with respect to climate change in particular, Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, predicted a fundamental reshaping of finance as climate change has become a defining factor in companies' long-term prospects. And he noted, investors are increasingly recognizing that climate risk is investment risk. As the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock currently has more than $9.6 trillion of assets under management. So part of what is at work here is the institutionalization of the securities markets by diversified investors. And when investment portfolios are diversified, mitigating systemic risk rather than individual firm risk is the key source of investment returns. And so that explains why institutional investors and asset managers who are looking to generate high returns, but are very sensitive to risks that impact the entire portfolio of investment companies. The result is that we see institutional investors collaborating to put pressure on companies to reduce their harmful behavior and reduce this risk. Institutional investors are also competing to attract so-called millennials who are due to inherit between $12 trillion and $30 trillion over the next 20 years. And millennials are said to place a substantial premium on social issues in their financial lives. To be sure, in response to the demand for ESG information, most publicly traded companies in the United States are already voluntarily producing reports containing such sustainability information, but they are doing so without the clarity and assurance that would come from using standardized reporting frameworks. So companies are providing this information, but they're doing it in a scattershot approach. It's very difficult to compare between companies because everybody is using different metrics, not by accident, I should say. Now, I'm going to move to the second stop on my roadmap, the U.S. system of so-called periodic disclosure. I'm a securities regulation professor, so I should be able to summarize this in 2 minutes. Investors in the United States, like in the rest of the world, acquire information about publicly traded companies in a variety of different ways and in many different formats. Companies seeking to sell securities in a public offering in the United States are required to file a lengthy registration statement that is reviewed and declared effective by the Securities and Exchange Commission before sales can begin. The registration statement that companies are required to file with their disclosures set out in line item instructions in two very lengthy SEC regulations, Regulation SA and Regulation SX. Actually, Regulation SX elicits financial information, so that's not all that lengthy. It's Regulation SK, runs about 200 pages in any standard size book. That's what calls upon companies to pull in all information into their disclosure documents apart from financial statements. Once a company does a public offering, or once it lists on a US stock exchange, or if it trades in the over-the-counter market, but has more than 2,000 shareholders of record and more than $10 million in assets, the company must also file public reports with the Securities and Exchange Commission annually on its Form 10-K and quarterly on its Form 10-Q. And if certain monumental events or occurrences happen between those quarterly filings, the company must also publicly disclose by filing on a Form 8-K within 4 business days. But those events that need to be disclosed in the interim between quarters are specific, and they're very, very large happenings in the life of a company. There are also certain other events and occurrences that trigger separate reporting and filing obligations. If you're soliciting proxies in the United States, if you're a company that requires a publicly traded company that requires a separate SEC filing, for example. The U.S. disclosure system is characterized by its periodic or its episodic reporting. It is not a system that generally mandates continuous or real-time disclosures, even if certain information would constitute material information to the reasonable investor. So I describe this to my students as the right of a U.S. public corporation to remain silent about good news or bad news, unless disclosure is otherwise called for in an SEC report or if disclosure is necessary to render other statements made by the company not misleading. So in the US, affirmative disclosure comes on these quarterly intervals generally, and silence, absent a duty to disclose, is not considered misleading under our securities laws. This sets the United States apart from many other jurisdictions, which place, including the EU and the UK, which place substantial limitations on the ability of public companies to keep silent about material inside information. Prompt disclosure of inside information is a general requirement in continuous disclosure jurisdictions. So investors in these companies, unlike in the United States, need not wait until the end of a reporting issuance of an annual report or a quarterly report to learn about information material to the company's profitability. To be sure, in the United States, some ESG-related information is already called for in line items of Regulation SK, requiring disclosure. Dating back to 1970s, the Securities and Exchange Commission has required environmental liabilities, what a company is facing in terms of risks of lawsuits by both government and the public. Is an object of disclosure. But today, many topics about which financially motivated investors are seeking information, from how cybersecurity threats are being managed, to human capital management data, to greenhouse gas emissions, they are not yet clearly required to be disclosed in annual reports and quarterly reports, even if that information presents material risk to a company's bottom line. And empirical data suggests that the disclosure that there is patchy, incomplete, and inaccurate. So unless publicly traded companies are affirmatively required to disclose much of this information in an SEC line item, the companies are often within their right to remain silent, and they exercise that right. Now, I want to briefly summarize the SEC's climate change disclosure proposal that has been pending for over a year that has generated such significant controversy. The proposal draws heavily on the four-pillar disclosure framework that was developed by the TCFD, this Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures that I mentioned at the outset. The four TCFD pillars are governance, strategy, risk management, and metrics and targets. So if the United States adopts the SEC's March of 2022 proposal. So as I said, it's been pending for a year, but this is how things would change. SEC reporting companies in the United States will be obligated to delve into their operations relating not only to uncertainty of how the firm may be affected by climate change, but also to provide important information about management strategies for dealing with the risk and the realities that lie ahead. Also, under this proposal, if an SEC reporting company has publicly set climate-related targets and goals, that company will also have to provide information about how the company intends to meet its goals and relevant data to indicate whether the company is making progress toward meeting that goals and how such progress has been achieved. So if you say something about what your goals are, you have to then keep reporting on those goals. But notice, nothing in that rule proposal requires companies to actually set goals. It only says if you set goals, you must provide information on how you are meeting them. In addition to drawing from the TCFD framework, the SEC's proposed rules also derive from the Greenhouse Gas Protocol, which dates back almost 25 years, which introduced the concept of scope of emissions to distinguish those emissions that are directly attributable to a corporation from those that are indirectly attributable. So, again, under this SEC rule proposal, reporting companies will be required to disclose scope one greenhouse gas emissions that arise from sources owned and controlled by the companies, as well as scope two emissions that result from the generation of electricity purchased and consumed by the company. So the object here is standardization, having all these reporting companies disclose the scope one emissions and the scope two emissions. Large public companies, which constitute about 41% of all SEC's reporting companies, must also include in its filing an attestation report, similar to how financial statements are required to be audited by a public accounting firm. This would require a third party attesting to the accuracy of those scope one and scope two disclosures. Scope three disclosures are more controversial. They encompass all indirect emissions that arise from the company value chain, such as emissions of company suppliers, retailers, or wholesalers of its products, as well as emissions from customers who use the product. So under the SEC's March 22 proposal, smaller companies are actually not going to be required to disclose scope three emissions. And the larger companies need only disclose when the total scope three is material, if it has a greenhouse gas emission reduction target that includes scope three emissions. So much fighting is going on of this necessity that trace the value chain, only applicable to large public companies, or if a company actually sets a goal for these scope three emissions. So as I alluded to at the outset of my talk, the SEC has encountered a substantial degree of pushback in connection with its rule proposal, with even one of the SEC's own commissioners lamenting, "We are not the Securities and Environmental Commission, at least not yet." Like so many other issues in the United States, ESG disclosure is characterized by extreme political polarization, with President Biden and the SEC's Democratic commissioners, as well as members of Congress, seeking to bring U.S. disclosure policy more in line with Europe, and with the SEC's two Republican commissioners and Republicans in Congress and governors in so-called red states, pushing hard back and accusing the others of overreach. Once again, this is a topic that could easily spend more time on. Instead, I'll simply quote a recent letter by Republican leadership in Congress to the Securities and Exchange Commission. It expresses the view that the SEC's climate change proposal rule exceeds the SEC's mission, expertise, exceeds its authority, and if it's finalized in any form, will unnecessarily harm consumers, workers, and the entire U.S. economy. I paraphrased a bit in there. According to the letter, Congress created the SEC to carry out the mission of protecting investors, maintaining fair, orderly, and efficient markets, and facilitating capital formation. But Republican leadership has said that it is not created to advance progressive climate policies. The leadership, the Republican leadership in the House, is also characterizing climate disclosure as a major question, which triggers this doctrine that our rather conservative US Supreme Court has now said, if something is a major question, and agencies do not have expressly clear statutory authority, then it's punted back to Congress to actually weigh in, which is often a recipe for utter and complete gridlock. In my view, and in the view of some of the US's most distinguished securities law professors, the claims by the anti-ESGers are wrong on both of these accounts. Requiring enhanced ESG disclosure is well within the SEC's central mission. And while the question of who is to determine the disclosure mandates for publicly traded companies is undoubtedly a major one, that question of who is to determine was asked and answered by the US Congress itself in 1934 when it created the Securities and Exchange Commission and sought for that newly created agency to be the principal regulator of US capital markets. In addition to the rule-changing challenges that are going to seek to narrowly construe the SEC's rulemaking authority, and to advance this argument that disclosure of climate change is a major question that must be kicked upstairs to US Congress, the SEC is also facing claims that its rule proposal on climate change disclosures constitutes an unconstitutional infringement on the free speech rights of US reporting companies. And here, once again, with a solid conservative majority of 6 of its 9 members, it's quite possible that some or all of the SEC's proposed disclosure rules on climate change will be struck down on one or more of these grounds. And the more climate change disclosure is regarded as controversial in the United States, the more likely it is that it is a question that must be answered by Congress or will be deemed to be subject to First Amendment review. Unfortunately, then, those who disfavor disclosure regulation have a clear incentive to politicize climate change and other ESG subjects so that the change is either thwarted by perpetual gridlock in Congress or blocked entirely on other rather dubious constitutional grounds. In other words, when right-wing members of the US Congress and state officials in so-called red states repeatedly describe disclosure regulation as controversial, and as members of the general public are ginned up to do the same, the US movement to align our ESG disclosure regime with the UK and the EU is stopped in its tracks. As I've written about previously, there is actually nothing major nor controversial in the SEC's approach to climate change. It has been requiring environmental disclosure since the 1970s, and this entire issue involves a determination on the type of information that investors need. So the first lesson the US can draw from the UK and the EU is that the enhancement of ESG disclosure is indeed fundamentally about disclosure. Disclosure regulation should be viewed on their own terms rather than being regarded as a mere subterfuge for imposing substantive regulation and mandates on companies to further a more politically progressive agenda. Questions about what large companies in the UK and the EU must disclose about their climate-related activities and how and when they must make such disclosures have not ignited the political firestorm that we see in the United States. And here's why. Because European countries view disclosure as only one part of a broader policy toolkit that deals more generally with climate change and the development of green finance regulation and the reduction of all sorts of other environmental harms. The toolkit in the United States, in contrast to the EU and the UK, our toolkit is pitifully small by comparison, with the aspirational goals set out by the Biden administration almost entirely dependent on an incentive structure, as opposed to the type of direct governmental regulation that is often the norm in Europe. So we keep fighting about disclosure in the United States because other administrative agencies, not the Securities and Exchange Commission, administrative agencies like the EPA, have been shut down because it said they lack the authority to actually do the substantive regulation. So it looks to Congress, and it's very tough to get things done there. So at the outset of my talk, I described for you briefly the UK and the EU's new reporting rules for businesses with respect to climate change and other certain sustainability matters. European countries in general require ESG reporting in many areas beyond environmental matters, including social, community, and rights issues. I focus talking about climate change. That's literally the tip of the iceberg. That's what we're fighting about in the United States. But once again, Europe leaves us in the dust with respect to other important sustainability matters. Recall that I emphasized before that the SEC's climate-related proposal is controversial, but it only applies to publicly traded companies already required to file reports with the Securities and Exchange Commission. This stands in contrast to the EU and the UK insofar as both jurisdictions are requiring climate-related disclosures for some private companies. This past year, the EU went even bolder when it adopted the Corporate Sustainability Directive, which requires businesses to report on a broad range of ESG matters. So not only climate change, businesses are going to require to report on pollution and water and marine resources and biodiversity, workers and their value chains. Business conduct in general as a governance matters. Like the recent changes in the UK, the EU's Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive is going to mandate reporting by large public and private companies, and they have threshold criteria for what type of private companies. So having more than 250 employees, more than 40 million euros in revenue, more than 20 million euros in assets. Two out of three of those, if you're a private company, you're gonna have to report. And so later down the road in 2028, the CSRD is going to be able to, is going to apply to non-EU companies with an EU-generated net turnover. So even US corporations with a presence in the EU are going to, beginning in 2028, have to start reporting. One can only imagine the actual controversy that would be generated in the United States if the SEC chose to extend its proposed climate-related rules to private companies in the United States. Private companies, even large private companies, have escaped the necessity of SEC reporting on the theory that investors in such companies are sophisticated parties who can fend for themselves. But as the institutional investors who manage all of our retirement funds begin to look to the private markets to generate higher returns, it has become clear that most of us, at least indirectly, are vulnerable to this widening information gap between the publicly traded companies and the private companies. In addition, there is a need to avoid incentivizing large companies to either remain private or to become publicly held. So another important lesson that the US can take away from the UK and the EU experience with ESG disclosure is that public company disclosure is insufficient. ESG information is important to the institutional and other investors who place their capital with private companies, as well as to other stakeholders in these companies, including employees, their customers, and their suppliers. The SEC is currently considering changes that could force private companies to come out of the dark and provide important information. Private offerings in the United States have accounted for more than $4.4 trillion in capital raising. That's the private markets, as compared to $1.23 trillion raised through registered offerings. And because of the way SEC rules define shareholders of record, a company that is not listed on the US stock exchange can stay private and escape SEC reporting obligations, notwithstanding that is owned directly or indirectly by hundreds of thousands of individuals. And so here, there's a well-known name for these types of companies with huge valuations that are nonetheless private, and that's they're called unicorn companies. And unicorn companies have grown exponentially over the past decade. These are companies with valuations exceeding $1 billion. About a decade ago, there were 43 unicorns worldwide. Today, there are more than 1,200 unicorns, about 430 in the United States and 41 right here in the UK. So in addition to changes being contemplated by the SEC, there's also legislation that's been introduced by progressives in our Senate, like Elizabeth Warren and Jack Reed, known as the Private Market Transparency Act, that would require private companies in the US to register with the SEC and make disclosure. But here I underscore, that's not what the fight is about. It hasn't even come. It's a bill that's just sitting there on desks. The fight in the United States about disclosure is about only public companies here. And so here we can take this lesson that in the UK, in the EU, large private companies as well as public ones are required to disclose. But it goes beyond that, because under the directive, it is not only disclosures triggered inwardly, that is, how is climate change impacting the company and the company's bottom line? The EU directive is requiring companies to assess materiality from an outward view as well. How is this company affecting climate? How is this company affecting environment throughout the world? Looking at the company's impact. We don't do that. And so that is another lesson here we can learn. And in fact, these two tracks, the inward materiality and the outward materiality, are eventually going to converge, because companies' impact on the environment and society, as that starts drawing more attention from government regulators, consumers, and workers, external forces are going to affect a company's future risks and opportunities. So it's essential to recognize that ESG information relating to a company's impact is already decision useful to investors as they determine whether to place their capital and how they or shareholders should be exercising their voting rights that will attach to shares they own. Reasonable investors and reasonable shareholders will be increasingly demanding information going to impact. The UK and the EU already recognizes this, and the US should begin to do so as well. So my final point, before I will happily turn to questions, relates to one of the observations I made at the outset of my talk. In the US, under our general system of periodic disclosure, attention centers so directly on disclosure mandates applying to quarterly and annual filings by SEC reporting companies, because those companies have the right to remain silent in the interim periods, provided they are not engaging in half-truths or making other misleading statements. We have listing requirements on our stock exchanges, but those listing requirements provide a massive business justification exception. And the norm in the US is to claim a business justification routinely, particularly when a company has bad news that it hopes will go away before its next quarterly report is due. So as we are looking to the UK and the EU for lessons, there is also much to be learned about the value of continuous and real-time disclosure. So thank you for inviting me here and providing such a wonderful reason to explore ESG disclosures and to better appreciate the extent to which the United States is out of sync with the real and progressive change that has been happening here in Europe. I'm happy and excited in the time remaining to your comments or to entertain questions.